All right. Thank you all. So the next question is posted up there, and if you could please submit your responses, that would be fantastic. So like I said, today's presentation is called Dynamic Group Retention with Kay Hill and Lori Schacht. Good morning, Kay and Lori. Or good afternoon, excuse me. So in a minute, we're going to hear a little bit more from our presenters, but I wanted to take some time to let you all know a little bit about WICSAP, which is the Washington Coalition of Sexual Assault Programs where I work. My name is Joshua O'Donnell, and I'm the training specialist here with WICSAP. We are a membership agency comprised of individuals and organizations dedicated to ending sexual violence in their communities. Our mission and goal at WICSAP is to unite agencies engaged in the elimination of sexual violence through education, advocacy, victim services, and social change. A primary role of what WICSAP offers is technical assistance. So at the coalition, a big part of our job is to provide support for all those agencies that are working to serve survivors of sexual violence, whether they need support in management or legal advocacy, have requests for trainings. That's what WICSAP works to offer, is resources and information to support the work that you all are doing, like today's training on support groups. You can become a member by going to our website at wcsap.org and click on the About Us tab located near the top of the website. What membership affords you is updates on upcoming statewide events and projects, as well as free access to our trainings and webinars such as today's. Speaking of today's webinar, now is a good time to mention some logistics. We're going to be taking questions by using the chat function in the lower left-hand side of this webinar. If you have a question at any point in the presentation, feel free to simply type it in, and what I'm going to do as the mediator is record those questions and pass them along to Kay and Lori during different breaks in the training. This webinar is going to count as an hour and a half of ongoing advocate training hours, and you're going to receive a follow-up email from ReadyTalk directly documenting your attendance for your records. Now, we know for webinars, what usually happens is quite a few staff will sit around one computer to watch the presentation together. So if this is what's occurring at your office, please just send me an email after the training at joshua@wcsap.org with your full name, and I will make sure to get you the appropriate email for your documentation of attendance. Finally, the materials from this webinar are going to be recorded and posted to our website approximately 1 week following this training in case any of your staff would like to view it after the fact. Now, without further ado, we have one other question that I'm going to put up there as Kay and Lori introduce themselves. If there were any questions about the logistics, please type them into the chat function, and I will respond while Kay and Lori do their introductions. Thanks.
Thanks, Joshua. Okay, my name is Kay Hill, and I work for the YWCA Clark County Sexual Assault Program here in Vancouver. I've been with the program about 7 years, and when I was first hired, I was hired as a support group coordinator. And I learned a lot in the first year. Lori and I attended a Circle of Hope training in Yakima probably 5 or 6 years ago, and that training was great, and it helped us update our support groups here and really do a lot of work around that, as well as train other facilitators to be better equipped. I've done a lot of work on the support groups, so I've worked on creating different agendas, facilitating and training facilitators. I love this part of the job. I love working in support groups. I'm always amazed at the work that goes on with the women in group or the men in group or parents. But I think retention has always been a challenge in support groups. So you start out with this great group of 12 and you end up with, you know, halfway through the group you're down to 5 or 6. And I've always wondered why that is and what we couldn't do to make that better. So that's one of the reasons I really wanted to focus on that in the training today. So here's Lori.
Great. Thank you, Kay. So as you said, my name is Lori Schacht, and I'm the director of the Sexual Assault Program here at the YWCA. And also love being a part of groups, either the training of those facilitating and co-facilitating or being a part of the actual group. So I've had a chance to co-facilitate women's group, teen groups, a group for women who are incarcerated. We've done some for male survivors. And all the groups are different, and they all are such an incredible opportunity for healing and support. And it's a real honor to be a part of them. In doing this training, I feel like we have a lot of experience and are excited to share that. And I recognize that we are not experts in this, that you also, I see that a lot of you have done groups before, so I really want to recognize that you're bringing a lot of information to this, and hopefully we'll be able to gather some of that you can share it with one another as well. So very excited to be here, and I'm very thankful to WICSAP for bringing us here.
And we're very happy to have you. Thank you. And a couple folks were just mentioned, if it's possible, Kay and Lori, to speak up just a little bit louder into your phone so we can all hear you.
You bet.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and if we start to get a little quieter, please let me know. I appreciate you saying that.
Of course, yeah.
Oh, and I love that someone shared that, so mom support groups and mom who have medically fragile babies, a different group, so real, someone who works with mom's groups. So I appreciate the chat. I'm getting used to this chat function, so if I... Joshua will help me with it.
Yeah, I'll be happy to, yeah.
Let's see, and now we're just catching up. So that's who we are. And today what we're hoping to do, three main things of really differentiating between the different types of groups. That was very helpful for me when I started because I've been doing this about 11 years ago. When I first started, it was, you know, there's a group going, so I got to sit in with someone who was a very well-seasoned facilitator, but I didn't have any formal training with it, and I thought, oh dear, and to learn by doing, and the Circle of Hope training was fabulous for really clarifying that. So one of the things we'll do today is differentiating between the different types of group and the three stages of a group. We call them 1, 2, and 3. I think they're also, they can be called, and I'll probably get these out of order, but the forming, norming, and storming, or however it is you've heard this, but in understanding the different stages of a group can also help in different things we can do for retention with a group, and also gathering ideas for maintaining participation and attendance through icebreakers and different connections and exercises. One of the things you'll probably hear us say throughout this is retention is about connection, and all the exercises and things that we're talking about are about increasing and maintaining that connection.
So we want to talk a little bit about the different types of groups. The one we don't have on the screen would be the self-help group, or you may know it as a 12-step group. But the two that most often get confused or where the boundaries tend to get a little bit blurred are between the psychoeducational group and therapy group. What we do here at the Y in Clark County are all psychoeducational groups. And the way that I usually describe them when I'm talking to a potential group member is to say that the group is tool-based. So it's not about why you have flashbacks, it's about what you can do when you have a flashback. So in a psychoeducational group, bad things happen, and then what information can I learn, or what do I need really to keep moving forward and to process and get through the healing? When we look at a therapy group, we think more about bad things happen and then the whys. Why am I unable to cope? Why am I stuck? Or how do I move forward? The deeper questions, and just the questions addressing moving more toward change. It's really important for the facilitator to understand which kind of group they're doing. And sometimes here we have therapists who will facilitate our groups, but when they do, they still are not therapy groups. They kind of take off the therapy hat and do a psychoeducational group. And it's really helpful to differentiate between these two as a facilitator, so that if you start veering a little bit further toward therapy in an area where you really don't want to go, where you may not be equipped to go, you want to move it back toward the psychoeducational. And that can be a little tricky sometimes. It's also really important to the members to know what kind of group they're joining. They may feel completely different about joining a therapy group versus joining a psychoeducational group. And if their preference is to join a therapy group, this may not be what they want. On the other hand, they may feel like it might be a little less threatening or a little bit maybe not stepping quite so far into the deep end because it is a psychoeducational group. So I always explain the difference to them and make sure they understand what we're providing here and what we're not providing. So there are, So today what we're going to focus on are psychoeducational support groups. There's a lot to talk about with support groups, and we're focusing on a really, really narrow piece, retention. That just tends to be the challenge that is across the board with groups. We're also, Lori's going to talk about the three stages of group. We're focusing on a closed group, so a group that lasts 5, 8, or 10 weeks, or maybe 12 weeks, not an ongoing group. An ongoing group will process the stages completely differently. So when we're talking about these stages, keep that in mind. Okay?
So again, this is Lori. Again, remembering the key to retention is connection here. And even before a group ever starts, there's so many things that you can do that can really contribute to a participant's connection to both the agency or organization as well as the group they'll be participating in. And it might seem surprising, but it actually does start well before the group ever begins. So it's important to have a plan and to be really clear about it. What kind of group is it going to be? So is it for parents? Someone had said that they did a group for, I think it was kids with health issues. I'm sorry, it was when they signed on that they did a different group. Okay, I won't look for it because I'm too slow on that. But all different types of groups. Oh, okay, a little louder. Thank you. So is it for parents or incest survivors? Is it a men's group or a teen group? Is it for individuals who identify in a certain capacity? So really being clear of what type of group it is. And then thinking about how many will participate. And the number is important because you want there to be a critical mass. Obviously, if it's too small, then it's both awkward for the participants in the ratio, but it also it limits what people get out of it, because a huge part of a psychoeducational support group is that they're sharing with one another and really learning from what each other brings to the group. The size might be limited by the actual size of the room that you'll have it in, or will there be one or two facilitators? I realize in smaller programs it may not be possible to have a co-facilitator, so being mindful not to have a group that's too large, that is too challenging to facilitate with just one person. So thinking about having a maximum number and also what the minimum number is. We've done this before where when we started out with a group of saying, you know, we'll take up to 15 registered, knowing there will usually be a few that drop off. But if we didn't have at least 5, we wouldn't start the group. We'd wait until we had more, and rather than just going through and trying to do it as a really small group. The last part about the plan is the intakes, and really reviewing those, looking, have they been updated? The intakes should cover the information that you need, but absolutely no more. And sometimes intakes are handed down over the years or from different agencies or different areas, and it's kind of like, great, here's the intake. But it's important to look at those periodically and have a conversation with your program manager and look at it with fresh eyes just to see if anything needs to be either added or deleted. Does your intake ask whether it's safe to send mail or to leave voicemail? You know, what are they hoping to get out of it? Do they have concerns in coming to group that could be addressed? So really being thoughtful about what you're asking of the future participants on the intake. And thinking about what kind of group it is also good to think about where you're going to advertise for the group. You know, getting that critical mass, it's important to know where would you advertise. So I want to ask and see if people would put in the chat section or some places that you've had, because I'm sure we came up with some, but I know there's some really creative ones. So if anyone is willing to write in the chat of different places that perhaps you've advertised upcoming groups. So it could be with local therapists. It might be in the newspaper. It could be with schools or colleges or maybe, you know, women's studies classes. One of them came up that was in the restroom at recovery meetings, drug and alcohol programs, community health centers, schools, churches. These are great. Could be daycares, the local DSH office.
Social media.
Social media, great. Mental health services, the newspaper as well. These are fabulous.
Community advisory council meetings and universities. Those are really good.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wonderful. And one thing that's important to think, if you have the staff time to do it, if you're delivering flyers or talking about it, Campus Women's Resource Center, perfect. Going in person can really help, because sometimes it can just give a face to, wow, this is a service versus just a flyer. Sometimes I think we get inundated. Oh, here's another great one. Criminal justice classes at colleges. Fabulous ideas. Thank you. And the regular advertising can really create and forge strong community relationships and collaborations. Oh, the local homeless shelter. Let's see what else. There's another community partner agencies, local university campus groups. These are great. And there it goes. Okay, got that one. And you may find sometimes it takes a bit of momentum to get it going. So if you advertise a group and you find you don't get enough, it's okay to go back to keep track of those places and then approach them again. We tried doing a group for men, and what we found, we actually decided to switch it and do it for males whose partner has experienced sexual assault. And when we sent out that flyer, we got, oh, here's another great one, hairdressers. These are fabulous. And we also have what we call, someone said we have what we call appointment cards. We seek out agencies throughout the service area where, whether they be therapists, massage therapists, anyone that may come in contact with a survivor. That's a great idea. Thank you for that. And someone asked, are we going to be provided a copy of the answers being provided to this question? Joshua, is that?
Yep, he says he'll make one.
Oh, I see. Sorry.
I'm going to be recording all these great ideas, and then I'll send them out in an email to everybody.
Beautiful. Thank you. So thank you for sharing those ideas. That's really exciting.
One of the things that I get invited to do about three or four times a year, is go and talk to another support group. There's Department of Corrections here does a women and trauma group, and it's for women who have some connection to the correction system. And I go personally and take stuff about our group and talk to them. And I think that's been really helpful because sometimes I think that there might be women in that class that would be reluctant to come to the Y otherwise. And we've had good result with women showing up after that and signing up and feeling welcome. So that's been really great to make that connection. I refer to their group because I think it's a great group, and they invite me to come and refer to ours.
Wonderful. And what I was saying with the men's group before was we didn't get much for the adult male survivors, but when we tried one for the males whose partner had experienced sexual assault, we got a lot of response from the people that we forwarded it out to. So a lot of community members had said, oh, this is a great idea. So that really gave us the indicator that there is interest for this, and we know that this is going to be meeting a need a little better than the other one that we had tried. So listening to the feedback you get from your community. Okay. So we put screening, but we at our agency we call it the intake, however you call it, but the pre-group meeting. And things that are important to think about this is, first off, who will do the intake or the screening? Whenever possible, it's great to have one of the facilitators do that intake. And part of that is because then that's one more familiar person that the participant will know when they show up at group. Sometimes it's not always possible to have it be the same person, but if it is, we highly encourage that. How far in advance would you do this screening? And I realize we should have switched this a bit and just put intake for everything. I apologize for that. I think when I hear screening, I often think of it screening someone out or in, and that can feel a little like, oh, I have to pass a test to be able to attend the group, which is why we call it an intake. So I apologize. I just didn't catch that before here. So how far in advance doing the intake? We have found that about 1 or 2 weeks prior to the group seems to really increase the probability that members will show up for group. If you do it too much further in advance, it kind of drops off their radar and they're less likely to show up. But it's close enough to the group that they're geared up for it. They've recently, met with you and have their questions answered. And that's a really good amount of time before group starts. And we certainly can do them over the phone, but if they are able to come in and do them in person, that's best. And what will be covered at the meeting? And I think that's helpful for people to know. Again, as Kay said, clarifying the type of group it will be, and so that they know what to expect. You can go through the basic outline or the agenda with the group so they can see the topics that will be covered, the expectations of group members. We always talk about the confidentiality policy and also mention at that time, too, that we're mandated reporters. Sorry. At that time, you can also answer any questions. It's a great idea to show them the room if it's possible. If the room is open and available, it just increases their familiarity with your agency and where they're going to be going, and, again, a little more connected to the physical space. At that time, we also explain that a release will be required if they want their attendance verified, that it is always their choice. Sometimes with our parents group, they may have a caseworker that's requiring they get some kind of parenting class or some kind of class. So we tell them we'll be happy to verify if they want that, but that's always their choice. So they would sign that release and be really specific about it. Let's see here. The next part about when a group would not be a good fit, and I'm guessing you would know this since a lot of people have done groups before, but what are some of the things where it might be really appropriate to screen someone out of group? Are there things you can think of? And if you're willing to just type some in the chat side. I mean, one of the ones that comes up is if someone has just recently been sexually assaulted. Suicidal ideation, right. Attempts that are not controlled. So those are two of the really big ones that we have and look for. Person doesn't understand confidentiality. That's a great one. Or if they're not willing to comply with that. And that's a really fair thing, and it's a choice that they're making. So, and again, if you have extreme mental health disorders, yeah. So these are one of the things with this is always having another option if possible. When I first started, I have to admit, I used to feel guilty about, oh, if we're screening someone out, that we're not giving them services that they should have. But I've since really learned and had it reiterated again and again that if we put someone in a group simply because it's the only option, and if it's not a good option, it doesn't serve them and it doesn't serve the rest of the group members. So very compassionately saying, we want you to be in the best spot and the most supportive services. And that may not be in a group setting right now. So referring them for individual therapy or maybe it's just talking with an advocate or referring them for the crisis line. It might be now's not the right time, but perhaps they want to be kept on the list for the next group. So there are a lot of different options, and if you do put them on for the next group, make sure you call. Again, framing this conversation in a way that's screening them into the best services possible, not screening them out of the group. And lastly, with this part of the packet, we have a packet, and these are all great answers. Thank you for, I love this, of discussing with a provider prior to group assessments to determine if they're appropriate and then screen if they don't appear appropriate. So thank you for all this. With the packet that we have in ours, we'll include things like the client's rights, the group guidelines. We have a brochure on self-care information. And we'll also have the contact information for the facilitators. Now, again, being very respectful, it may not be safe for them to take information. So if they don't want to, they certainly don't have to. Sometimes just by asking someone, is it safe for you to take this? And if not, please don't feel like you need to, really gives them the space to know that we're sensitive to their needs and we want them to receive services that are appropriate for where they are in their life right now. So thinking about in building this connection of if you've got a potential group member, what do you think they might want to know or learn about the group or the agency during this screening? And recognizing it's not just us, not just the agency that's trying to see if it's a good fit, but it's a two-way street that here you have someone that's seeking services, and what are they looking for to know that this is the right group and that they want to be connected to this? Some of the things might be, you know, like, do they feel welcome here? Is your agency inclusive? I think I saw that someone was works with LGBTQ youth, and so does your agency have anything, and it could be a sign, a sticker, anything that recognizes, are they welcome? And that's really important. There are a lot of times when, you know, people look around and they say, do I see either pictures of someone that looks like me there, or do I see anything that I relate to here? Is it a safe environment? Yeah. How many people are in the group? That's a great one. How will their information be handled? I always say when we're doing the intake that I tell them everything I'm writing down, or if they're comfortable, I'll show them as I'm writing it down, and I'll also read it back and say, I want to make sure I'm just gathering your information. I also make it very clear this is only for the other facilitator, the co-facilitator, and then once we get ready to start the group, we shred all the information. We are not keeping records. Another one is, will I have to share? That's a great question, because people may be pretty anxious about that. So giving them the freedom to say in this group, it's your option of what you share or how much you share. So fabulous. And they'll often ask what we would say to their caseworkers. And again, that goes back to the release of information. And we always say we won't say anything that you haven't written down, that you haven't asked us to say. And so if it's just confirming the numbers, we do, when a caseworker wants to know, and assuming the client has given the release of information, all we do is verify the attendance and the dates that they attended. We do not say, and they talked about this, or they participated in this way, because that's not, you can't do an appropriate release on that. We really want to be sure we are only sharing the information that they have given us the approval to share.
And we also tell them that without their permission, we won't even share that they're in group or that they've come in for services. So that's part of their confidentiality. They can come and be completely confidential. Mm-hmm. And the topics covered.
The topics that are covered, that's great. Again, kind of going through the agenda with them. I think that's really helpful. Other things that came up are, do you offer things to make a group more accessible? What is the accessibility like at your agency? Is there childcare available or bus passes? Things that could come up for as barriers to people seeking services. So a lot of things just to consider, and again, if I put myself in the space of someone coming in and they have either a lot of questions or they're trying to figure out, wow, this is a big risk coming to group, is this a safe place to take that risk? So just looking at it through those eyes. And I think this is just wonderful. If people can receive mail, if they're comfortable with that, sending an invitation is a really nice reminder that group is starting. It assures the member that they are expected and they're welcome, and it might be the nicest piece of mail they've gotten in a long time. It's not a bill. It's not some junk mail that comes through. It sets a tone for group, and it says that they're valued. Kay always makes these really beautiful ones, and either getting just pretty paper or cutting out stencils or sometimes just putting some kind of nice sticker on it. But there's one here that I have in my hand that just has a beautiful Maya Angelou quote on the front saying, "The best part of life is not just surviving but thriving with passion and compassion and humor and style and generosity and kindness." And so that's on the front, and when you open up the invitation, it says, "Welcome to your," and this one in particular says, "women's support group, where your presence is so important." And then it lists the times and the dates of the group and the location and says, "If you have any questions, please call and list the facilitators." Or if they're volunteer facilitators, it has the number of the agency so they can call. It's just a really lovely way to say, "We're so glad you signed up for it, and we want you to be there." If you've done the intake and it's too close to the time to send out the invitation, you can always give that to them in the packet. Again, it's just one more way to say, "You're welcome. We want you to feel connected here." I'm going to turn it over to Kay now.
So a lot of you have done groups, and so you'll be really familiar, I think, with the stages we're going to talk about. But as we talk about each stage, we're really going to try to focus on some things you can do within each stage to help create better retention. Again, we're talking about a closed group. Retention would look completely different in an ongoing group or a drop-in kind of group. So in the first stage, you know what's going on. They're scared a lot of times. There's a lot of apprehension, fear. What have I gotten myself into? In women's group in particular, a lot of times women will say, I haven't ever trusted other women. I don't have close girlfriends. I was uncomfortable about this. But they start to get to know each other. That's when goals and guidelines are established, which is really important. The first group is really, really crucial to retention. I don't know how many of you have experienced when you started a group. The first group has 12 people, the second group has 10, and you lose a couple right off the bat, and you don't hear from them again, and they're just gone. You know, some of that might be that they've made a good decision that group, they're not ready for group, but some of it might be that, you know, something could have been done differently, and you could have retained them. Your role in the first stage really is to help members discover similarities and connections. Again, you want to start building those connections from the very, very beginning, because when someone feels connected, they want to come back. They're drawn back, and that's really what you want. And then I always really make a point of letting members know that it would be really normal to go home and sort of feel panicked and think, "What have I got myself into? I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I want to do this. I'm not going back." And I tell them that's a really normal reaction to have, even if coming back is a really good thing for you. And so if you have that reaction, you could just ignore that, and you could come back anyway. And a lot of times women will come back and tell me, "Yeah, that happened. You were right. But I came back. You said to come back." So that can really be helpful to take the power out of that fear. And if group really isn't right for them, it isn't a good fit, you know, I don't think that they're going to come back just because you've said that. I think that it will help in the times when they really want to do this, they're just a little scared. Also, I always start talking in the very beginning about that we're going to give them a certificate at the end of the group. And lots of times I think people really want to complete something to get a certificate. They like that goal. The certificate always seems to mean so much more to them than I really anticipate. And I think that's really interesting. But I always talk about that in the beginning. And also when Lori was talking about sometimes in parents' groups, they want, you know, the CPS worker wants to know if they've attended or the judge or whatever, and they may not want to sign a release, and that's totally their choice. But if they have the certificate at the end, they can use that to show that they came to group. And again, it puts that power back in their hands and that choice back in their hands.
We've had a really neat example before of a participant in a parents group, and their caseworker was asking for information. Of course, we didn't say whether or not this person is receiving services. But when they came to group, we asked them, you know, is that something you want released? And they thought about it and they said, no, this is the first thing I've completed in a long time, and I really want to take that certificate to them. And it was a real moment of empowerment for them, not just what they learned in the group, but also being able to responsibly complete this. And so it was a really nice thing that they made the choice for themselves.
So during the first stage, you want to greet each person individually. This is where it's really going to be helpful if the facilitators are the people who've done the intakes. They will show up and they know one person, and that can feel like a lifeline. And again, you're finding similarities between group members from the very, very start and help them make those connections with icebreakers, really non-threatening things where they can start to see little things that they have in common. We always start each group with, this is the first group of however many, 8 meetings, 10 meetings, 12. One of the reasons we do that and the way it relates to retention is that sometimes that's helpful to group members as you count it down so that they really are aware of where they are in the process and so that it starts from the very beginning, helping them prepare for when the group is going to be over. And when we talk about that third stage, you'll see that there's some real struggle with that. Go ahead. So, and then you want to make it a safe place. So creating guidelines, and I'm sure all of you have lots of experience creating guidelines, making sure confidentiality is on those guidelines, and making sure that there's plenty of time given to do that and that the group is able to contribute to them so that they can buy into that and so that they can create their own safety in that. Making sure they understand they have a choice about whether or not they share, that it's not a requirement. We always let, in our groups at least, we always let a group member have the opportunity to pass. And sometimes there have been group members who've been really quiet for the whole entire time. And I'll wonder, you know, if it was really helpful to them. I'm often really surprised in what they say to me at the end or what I see when they turn in their evaluations. I think some people just aren't ready to share, but they can take in really a lot, and it can really be helpful to them.
And I want to comment about it's a challenge with if a group is open-ended, maybe creating a space, which I think in those cases, obviously, really spending time each time of the guidelines and making sure, so with new people or the ongoing, even if it's, you know, if people think, oh, I've heard this time and time again, that's just a part of the group is going over those guidelines and making sure it's clear for everyone.
And then comfort considerations, you know, the room set up, coffee or tea. If you're having a group that lasts a couple hours or more, I would really consider a smoking break. It's really difficult for smokers to go 2 hours talking about really hard stuff without a break sometimes. And obviously showing where the bathrooms are. In our group room, people can bring in their breakfast or lunch or coffee or whatever they want. Lori has suggested sometimes if people bring blankets in with them or things, sometimes the room gets a bit cold. So just letting them know that we want them to be comfortable and that they're able to do those things. Being an effective facilitator. This is one of the most important things that can help with retention in the very beginning. I think when people come to group, they're scared, and a lot of times they're uneasy about how it's going to go, and they really look to the facilitator to manage the group, to be able to redirect when we need to redirect, get us out of there on time, and encourage and not push, all those things. I think they're really looking to that. And so it's important from the very first group that you do a good job with that. It's also really important that you're getting along with your co-facilitators. So make sure you've met before group, that you know a little bit about each other, and if you're going to have any issues, that you work that out outside of group, because the last thing people come to these groups can tolerate is tension, and they will pick up on it. They are experts at picking up on tension. And then honoring the agenda. So we always give them a list of what is going to be covered on each week. And we always stick to the agenda. And in doing that, we also have room during the meeting for other things that come up that might be important that week. But there's a couple reasons for sticking to the agenda. One of them is that someone might really be counting on that topic. They might really need some help, and they're thinking, I'm really excited about week three because we're going to talk about relationships, and I really, really need that. And on the other side of it, someone might be thinking, oh, week four is on mothers. I can't deal with that. I absolutely can't deal with that. And they may choose not to show up for week four. So if you've moved mothers to week five and they show up, that can be really scary and awful. So that's really part of keeping it safe, is letting them know what they can really expect. Encouraging notes from the last group is something that I came up with a few years ago, and it's really, really been good. And the way it works is really simple. On the last session of a group, so week eight of an eight-week group, women, and I've mostly done this in women's group. We can do it in parent, you can do it in any group, but I'll talk about women's group today because I have a couple samples from there. Women are invited to write a note of encouragement to the women coming into the next group. And so it just can be just a couple of sentences or whatever they want. But it serves a couple of purposes. One, it's really nice for the women who come to the first group to hear from them, but it's also really nice for the women leaving group to sort of share what they've learned. I'm going to read a couple that we've gotten so you can kind of get a feel for this. I have lots and lots of these that I've collected by now, but I'll just share a couple. So in the weeks to come, you will realize that you are going to be okay. This class helps you deal with your deepest feelings and misconceptions. I feel more aware and more at peace instead of just feeling dead inside and fearful. I have a long way to go yet, but this class has taught me so much about the myths of rape and what it has done with my trust and relationship with others. It has also calmed me so I'm not so angry. Please speak up and talk about it. You'll realize how much people really care. So good luck to you. And then here's another one. Stick with it. After the first group, I wanted to quit and not come back. I was overwhelmed and I felt like I wouldn't fit in. By coming back, you'll realize this group might be the one place where you really can be understood, because everyone here will know the pain you're in, even if you haven't realized it yourself yet. So
Kay always has to read those because I start crying when I do.
She does start crying. So those are, like I said, examples that women have written in group. And I always love the look on people's faces when they hear those, because I think they really do sort of create an invitation that comes from inside, and an invitation that as facilitators we can't even do in the same way. Another thing that we do is weekly snail mail. So this is something that I think really has contributed and really been helpful when it comes to talking about retention. What we do is we get some like decorative paper from the Office Depot or Staples, or whenever I see stuff on clearance, I pick it up. And we print out quotes on it. A couple of them, one of them by Maya Angelou, "I can be changed by what happens to me, but I refuse to be reduced by it." So we print that in like, 60 font on a really pretty piece of paper, fold it up and mail it to each of the group members. And we mail those out, I usually mail them out the afternoon after the group is finished, so they get it in a couple days. And if I want to put a note on it, like, "see you next week," or "thanks for coming," I'll do it on a post-it that can be removed. So when they get this quote, the paper is completely anonymous, because sometimes they like to put them on their fridges or on their mirrors, and so I don't want it to say sexual assault anywhere on it or be identifying in any way. I've also done the same thing and put it on bookmarks that I've made, which you can make really easily with cardstock or just lots of different ways. If you have a laminator, you can have all kinds of fun. We do affirmations sometimes and print them on like business card stock. That's a really easy way to do it. And we mail those out. And again, like Lori said with the invitation, it might be that it's the nicest piece of mail that they get. They love them. It's really funny when I get really busy and I've ended up skipping a week now and then, it's the first thing I hear about at the next group. It's like, "I didn't get any mail. Where's my mail?" And so it's really important to do it if you're stick with it, or they really want it. Again, I want to remind you, though, always make sure that it is okay to send mail to their house. And if it isn't, go ahead and send the ones that you can, and then put the other one in an envelope, and you can hand it to them at their next group meeting, and they can keep it in a folder at the office or whatever they'd like to do with it. And then when we close each meeting, we started closing in a way that I think was helpful retention, because they were in their closing, they made a commitment about coming back. And the way we did that was simply with a brag and why I'll be back. A couple things. It closes the group on a positive note, which I think can be really helpful, and it encourages them to return. It's they make that commitment. And so sometimes they'll say something like, "My brag is that I got up before 11 o'clock every day this week, and why I'll be back is, well, I don't want to come back, but I know it's really good for me." Or, "I'll be back because I'm really starting to feel like I'm not alone," or whatever it is. But just saying out loud makes that commitment for them.
And sometimes you've had it where someone might say, "I'll be back because I want to see how Kay's doing next week," like another group participant. And then it's within the group, they're really supporting one another. It's like, I'm coming back because I want to make sure she made it through this really tough week ahead. And that's a pretty powerful commitment.
And sometimes it's been helpful when they said, "Well, I won't be back next week because I'll be, in Florida, but I promise I'll be back the week after." And that can be really helpful, because if a group's been going a while, members worry about each other when they don't show up. So it can also be a cue in so that you know when someone isn't going to be there, but that they haven't dropped. And lastly, I think it really reminds participants of the value of what they're doing when they say things like, "I'll be back because I'm feeling just a little bit better," or "because for the first time I was able to go out and sit in my yard," or whatever it is. I think it's just a really good reminder of all the really, really good work that they're doing.
And before we go on, I should check in. Joshua, have there been any questions that we should address?
You guys have been doing such a great job of checking in with them as they came in. I was just wondering if maybe at this point in what we've been talking about, at the beginning we asked the question about, are you from, do you solely run sexual assault groups, DV groups, or dual groups? And it looked like about 70% of the people did dual groups. And so I was just wondering if you wanted to explain, some of the differences that may arise within those groups, or why you were hoping to get a little feedback on that question.
Well, but are they doing dual groups or from dual programs? I don't know if they'd be doing a dual group.
Oh, it must have been dual program then. If maybe you just wanted to talk about why it's important to have an SA group or a DV group separate, or if you've done one that was dual before.
Sure. Well, that's a great question. We do have one, the Latino women's group that we have is a dual. They kind of alternate of which topic is covered each week, whether it's sort of focused more on domestic violence or sexual assault, and understand how interrelated they are, but really having that expectation for the women who are participating. Certainly some of the differences, you know, with domestic violence groups, and please know that Kay and I both work with, it's just a sexual assault program, so I don't want to speak out of my knowledge base. I know we've got the Safe Choice program within this agency as well, but I just don't want to speak where I don't know. But I know one thing, we wouldn't be doing mailings probably to the participants in the DV group, because if they're, they would state if it put them at any risk. I think there tends to be a whole lot more freedom to send mail to those who are in a sexual assault group versus a domestic violence group. One thing with thinking a lot of the, and this I guess is with both groups, obviously the confidentiality, and with that we also state if we see you out in the community that we wouldn't say anything, and really stressing that with participants, with one another, that they're not in identifying, you know, if they're making a strong connection, if they see one another in the community, that by identifying or greeting them, they're not putting one another at any kind of increased risk. Kay, are there other things that you think are differences that...
I think one of the differences that we talk about when we have talked with the people doing the DV groups here, is that they don't necessarily encourage participants to get together outside of groups socially. And we do in the sexual assault program in our groups generally suggest, sometimes after the 8 weeks, they want to continue to meet, some of them, on their own. But the DV groups here are ongoing and drop-in, so they have that opportunity to continue to receive support. With the sexual assault groups, once they're done with the group, sometimes they manage to form their own support systems, which we really encourage.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
And I appreciate someone had added, too, about the adding the topic on the reproductive or sexual coercion. That's a great one.
And the that's a really good point. It's really great if they don't interact during group but wait until after, because the last thing you want is three group members coming who have become the best of friends now, and then the rest of the group feels, you know, really out of sync or wonders, are they talking about me, you know, all that stuff. So it is really good to have that be really separate.
Thank you. So moving on to the second stage of the group, sort of where it shifts, and it's after, you know, this is usually after several sessions, people are kind of past that initial fear and terror, and they know what to expect, and now they're really getting their kind of common goals, they're having more of a direction. There might be a little bit more conflict, perhaps, or perhaps individually people are figuring out, oh, this is a safe place to speak up, and in doing so, in speaking up, there might be some more differing opinions or viewpoints, and that's totally okay. Again, going back to the facilitator's role to keep that a safe place to have differing opinions or different solutions people might have. You know, sometimes in a group, you may have someone who's like, this worked for me, you all have to do that, and really creating the space that is not forcing or directing individual participants, but people can share what works for them. One group we had, they really bonded well, and part of this is obviously they're getting the validation, they're building trust, and they're bonding. So one group in particular, they bonded so well that they decided to come up with a name that was totally unrelated to sexual assault, because they didn't want it to be a sexual assault group. So, and they called themselves the Dancing Frogs, and it created, even with that, created a more bonding within the group, and it was something that they included their humor, and it was just a really nice way for them to move forward together, you know, instead of having a whole group of individuals who are nervously looking around the room, they were then kind of facing all in the same direction in their journey. So as with the other ones, the facilitator's role is really nurturing this cohesion and keeping the momentum. So if there is something that comes up as a bit of a block, and that might mean in a participant, how they participate, you know, if someone is talking a lot or whatever, really balancing it out and giving each person safe space to talk. But it could also be allowing for the differences, and that's a way of modeling for participants that it's safe to have that versus if people have been really afraid of differences or with differences have come assault, then creating a safe space to have differing views can be very incredibly supportive for people. So, and ways you can work on retention in this second phase, again, the snail mail, absolutely. And keeping it geared towards the topic is pretty wonderful. So if you had a topic where maybe everyone was talking a lot about fear and what came up was some courage, or people shared different things, ways that they were courageous. If the facilitator has a quote about courage and sends that out, how reaffirming and wonderful is that to receive? Like, wow, this is really, they were really listening to what we said in the group. Also, the facilitator can, they're building group identity through this shared experience. Like I said, that the group that chose to give themselves a name. A project that takes more than 1 week, someone had said they do a collage, and that helps kind of as an icebreaker that can be over several weeks. So a project could be collage or beading. It could be a journaling thing, a group art project that grows a little bit week by week. Those are great things that both, they come back because they want to see this particular art project or collage grow and change. And even if they're struggling during the week, it's still, they're a part of this bigger picture. And that can really help with that connection. Again, keep counting down the weeks. It gets to be kind of a something safe and predictable, and it really acknowledges how far they've come as well. I find that pointing out or highlighting accomplishments or strides that the group has made with each other's support is powerful. I don't know if you've had this where maybe stuff has been really challenging and you get through a challenging situation, but you still think, oh, I've got this far to go, and we don't necessarily see all the accomplishments or strides that have been made up to that point. So don't be afraid to highlight that for the group. And the accomplishment might be, wow, look at how much you all have supported one another. Look at the great ideas that you've come up with. Look at how you've all continued to come back. And they can be very simple or they can be big accomplishments, but it's nice to recognize those, because oftentimes people might, they haven't stopped to do that. And it's a great way to validate and really highlight the strengths that they've shown. So the third stage, the final stage, what's going on during this stage is there's obviously transition and closure. And this is the end of the last several weeks of group. Obviously, there can be some real feelings of grief and loss. So if there's been a lot of bonding and connection during this group, which is exactly, you know, you're seeking the connection, that can look pretty scary to think that that might end. And so the facilitator's role is just acknowledging that. It's okay to say, wow, sometimes it can be scary, the thought of ending group, you know, of what's going on beyond that. So allowing space both for the feelings of that, but not focusing on that scary potential end stage, because there's a lot of strengths they're going into, they're continuing beyond group. An example of another accomplishment might be, look at the trust that you've all built within the group. I remember some shared at the very start that they had never shared things with someone else, or they didn't trust whatever it was, women or men, and to highlight then how they've done that towards the end. They may have forgotten that it was very hard to trust people in the very first group. Another part of this third stage is really focusing on the supportive network outside the group. So I'm going to go on to the next one here. So this is sometimes group members might be tempted to drop out during this to avoid the hurt of ending something. You know, it's easier to, might seem easier to leave before it feels like the group leaves them, you know, so they want to end that. But encouraging them to come back, encouraging, just recognizing it does feel like it might be easier at times, but you're important. Each person is important to how this group has functioned, and it's important that they're all a part of this. Involving group members in the planning and the closing, that can be really powerful of saying, so this group is coming to an end, but that doesn't mean the healing is. In fact, you all have even that many more tools that you're taking forward. So how would you like the closing to look? And really having it as a celebration versus a sad event, that it's really celebrating the incredible work that they've done and, again, what they're taking forward in this. Acknowledging, again, I keep saying that, acknowledging what they've done. In the second to last group, when we're talking about the notes to the future groups, that's a great one to bring them for the last group of saying, okay, next week is our last group. Think about if you'd like to share something with a future group, what would that be? If you want to write it during the week, that's great, or we can have some time during the last session to write a note to future groups. And that can be a really empowering way because it's a way for them to state, this is where I was when I first came here, and this is where I am now. It does get better. The certificates, obviously, are a big deal. So be sure you've got those. Ours say that such and such a person has participated in the group. And we don't say completed because, you know, we also can have certificates if they haven't necessarily completed, but they've participated in the group. Obviously, if they need it for a caseworker, we can, and with their request, we can put completed X number of sessions. But in general, we'll do it as this person has participated. And it's a beautiful way to recognize that. We've been very fortunate with the Cowlitz Tribe Pathways to Healing program is that they are often available to come smudge the very last week, and we'll share that with the participants. And it's been so kind of that program and also incredibly supportive and healing for the women who have received that. Other things you can mention, you know, reiterate there's still the hotline out there. Reiterate that there is advocacy. Reiterate that this is not the end of healing. It might be later on down the group they want to attend another group. But I keep saying this, but highlighting the strength, highlighting how far they've come during this. So, let's see, we might even be... Is there anything else left out, Kay?
I don't think so.
Okay, so now we're going to go to the match one that we asked earlier. But any other questions or things? I think I spoke a little more quickly because I was a bit nervous about doing this.
Oh, no, that's fine. Yeah. Yeah, so are there any questions anyone has that they would like to specifically submit? And while you do that, actually, I had a question because I think it's a rare opportunity when we get a chance to hear from people that have run a men's support group. If Laura, you experienced any different strategies for maintaining retention, or if you noticed that there were any differences within a men's group that you might mind sharing?
Yeah, with the we were able to have two different men's groups, and this was several years ago. The hardest part that we found with the men's group was getting it started in the first place, of just getting participants in. The men that we got to it were so unbelievably committed to it that actually within the group, partway during the group, they decided that an hour and a half wasn't enough, and so as a group, they decided to extend it to two-hour sessions because, as they said, it was a little too hard to sort of unzip their hearts and zip them back up in an hour and a half time. So they made that, and it worked with the co-facilitators to do that. So I would say with that, it was more, it's been more difficult getting them first signed up. And I think that's about getting the word out and really planting that seed. But once we had them, they were just phenomenally committed to it.
That's great. It looks like we had a couple other questions. How do you handle members who consistently disrupt or dominate in the group? And a question right before that seemed to be someone that takes up a lot of time or maybe uses offensive language even as they're sharing.
Yeah, those are great questions. Do you want to take
one? Redirection is a really a difficult thing. A couple things that I've used with when I'd like to move to another person or someone's been speaking a long time, I'll say, because sometimes you have to interrupt because they don't even take a breath. So I'll say something like, I'm going to stop you right there because that is such a great point. Has anyone else ever, blah, 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 I'm trying to bring it back to the group. Sometimes, I try to validate so that it's not embarrassing or humiliating for the person. But it can be really difficult redirecting people without hurting their feelings. On the other hand, you have to. The group is expecting you to do that, to keep the group moving and to monitor that and not let one person always take over. That will lead people to not come back because they'll say, why should I come? All I have to do is listen to her problem, whatever it is. So it's really important that you just get your gut on and do that one because it is pretty tough.
And as Kay said, of really doing it kindly and compassionately because no one wants to be made wrong, and recognizing when people, with the language part, I guess, sometimes we've talked about that in groups before. I think it's an important thing to have in the guidelines so you can always refer back to the guidelines of just saying, I'm so glad you're sharing. I want to encourage, my role is being sure we're staying with the group that we've committed to provide for you all, so I'm going to go back to the guidelines just to reiterate that we're not having offensive language or hate-based language here. Is there another way you can describe that? And one of the things that came up when we were doing another training was the people, and this I think came up more in the DV group, so describing the abuse a lot, and so it was pretty graphic and violent, and it was triggering for some of the other group members. And directing back of saying, rather than talking about the actual act or describing that, can people go back to, let's bring it to, what are feelings you all had throughout this, and what are some of the coping skills you got beyond? So it brings it back to the group. It's not the facilitator directing necessarily, but it's redirecting away from the, like I said, the violence language or the graphic part. Because again, you want to keep it as a safe group. And Kay has a great example of one group that had a member who was. Are you going to take
that? The woman who was interrupting. Yeah, I had a group, and there was a woman who was constantly interrupting to the point that, after I think the second or third group, one of the members came up and said, she interrupts all the time. I can't stand, she was really upset. So what I decided to try the next group was we had a ball, and it's kind of like a talking stick, something that if the person is holding it, they're the only ones who can speak. And I just suggested we were going to try this for this group without pointing anybody out or anything like that. And sure enough, so one woman was holding it, and the woman who had been interrupting interrupted. And so everyone looks at me, and because they will. They look to you to do something. And so I said, I need to stop you because, she has the ball, and I'd like her to be able to finish. And the woman who was interrupting said, I'm sorry, I know I interrupt. And so I said, And so when the first speaker was done, I said, okay, throw the ball to her. So she did. And she said, I know I interrupt. It's because I feel like I'm never going to be heard. I was never heard. And I feel like if I don't say it now, nobody's going to hear. And all of a sudden, it's like everybody wanted the ball. Like their hands are shooting up and it's just flying around. They're like, me too. I've never been heard. I feel like I have to yell. And it was really a positive moment. It turned into this really affirming thing with where women were saying, I feel like I haven't been heard, and that's why I do that. And so that was really helpful, because then we could talk about it more openly in the future when it came up, where we'd say, you know, let's let her finish, and it would just be enough to remind, and it really worked out well. I did not anticipate it working out that well, but it did.
Sounds great. Yeah, that sounds like a really easy way, too, to rather than taking that role like you were discussing as a facilitator of a potentially awkward moment that may quiet somebody, to then just make it about, hey, here's a new group process that we want to try. I think that's fantastic. Speaking about group process, one of the questions came up from Kyra about how structured are your groups and what models do you use, if you use any? And it sounds like they mentioned we utilize TREM, and so just curious about the structure of your group.
I don't know how to answer that question. I'm not familiar with that model.
So we've just created agendas based on. I'm trying to think. I think we've probably adapted the ones that came from the Circle of Hope training years ago, and just adapt them to be appropriate for the different groups that we have.
Yeah. So we have a topic each week. We typically have an opening with an icebreaker of some kind or some sort of check-in. Then we have the topic. We usually have at least a little bit of free time to talk about whatever's hot that week. Oftentimes we'll have some sort of activity, and then always have time for a closing or a checkout. And then other than that, the weeks, you know, they go by really fast, and we try to get a lot done in them.
And so for the rest of you on the call right now, at the WICSAP website, Circle of Hope is a current guide that we have that's available for download on our website. If you just, in the search box, type in Circle of Hope, you can get access to that, and that's what we're speaking of. And it sounds like, in the Circle of Hope, there's a variety of topic examples listed, and it sounds like Kay and Lori, you just kind of based on the feel of the group will decide that, it seems like boundaries are what we need to talk about next week because of what's come up in previous weeks. Is that usually how you select topic ideas?
No. Thank you for asking that, Joshua.
Sure.
We'll have the, if it's an 8-week group, we will have the topics determined ahead of time. So when we're doing the intake with someone, we'll say, these are the topics we'll be covering, and this is the order, just so that they know what to expect. So if it's boundaries, if it's self-esteem, if it's safety or mother issues, if the group does come up with, you know, throughout the group, obviously they're very organic, so if something comes up and there seems to be a lot of interest or heat around a particular topic, we can always add that in, you know, perhaps the following week, or maybe even cover it from then. But we try really hard not to totally shift it. In case someone's, like Kay was saying, if someone's coming and expecting that we're going to talk about mother issues and they really wanted that, we don't want them to be sort of surprised by the fact that we wouldn't be covering it. So we want to stick, we let them know ahead of time the topics we'll be covering. And part of that for us is just, okay, so they know what to expect and kind of that safety.
And we can share the agendas that we use if that'd be helpful. It looks like somebody wanted some help with a men's group, and we can definitely share the agenda we've used in groups here.
That would be fantastic. Thank you.
And the one we have, we were all set to do a group for the adult male, the males whose partner has experienced sexual assault. And what we did, there was a Sexual Assault Awareness Week publication, I think from years ago, The Partners in Healing, and we adapted that. I think it's a 5-week one, and adapted that. Now, I can't tell you, we had great response because we don't yet have enough males signed up for that one. So that'll be to be determined here, but it was a great outline of just taking that book, and the parts were, let's see here, I've got them right here. Well, the reality of rape and the trauma of rape, the support without self-sacrifice, the fear and sexuality, and then moving ahead or moving forward. And so that was, you know, sometimes just looking in some of the great brochures and some of the other publications, there's a really nice outline. So I guess a lot of our stuff has been pretty, I'd say organic, but with the men's survivor group that we did several years ago with those two groups, we did have topics. They chose to go in, they had a lot more variation from the set topics than my experience has been with the women's group. They knew what they were all doing, they knew what the agenda for the whole group was, but they also wanted, I think, as a group, they decided, oh, we really want to talk about this next week, and it was, they had consensus there, so we supported them in that and brought as much in the way of exercises and information on the particular topics that they wanted.
And the parents group, I think, we do a non-offending parents and caregivers group, and they tend to view support group almost more of a class, and so I think they're more expect certain topics to be covered and to gain information. It's a little bit different dynamic, I've found, than the women's support groups are. And we have a lot of fathers that come to our class, which I really am grateful for. I enjoy that.
And there was a question that came up earlier that I didn't address. Sorry, it was about swearing. Is that just part of the process, or do you allow that? I personally have no problem with it, but with the groups, generally, we do not, I'm not going to make anyone wrong for it, but I think keeping it, if the group decides that that's how they want to communicate, giving them the space for it, but really being cognizant of the fact that there might be some people in the group that that's very offensive to. And so if we're creating a safe space for a group, I don't want people using racist, homophobic language. I want to encourage it to be an inclusive group because I don't know everyone's story and background. And so the same thing, if someone is strong in their faith community and comes to a group where there's swearing, that might really shut down that participant. So it could be a way of saying, wow, it sounds like there's a lot of energy around this. Is there, you know, so that we're not using swearing in the group, is there another word you want to come up with when you're really frustrated with something? And so it could be something that's just a non-expletive that still honors the emotion behind that.
And builds group identity.
Right.
In a way, if they have a goofy word that they use, that can be kind of fun.
Great, thank you. And just as, because there have been questions coming up about specific group focuses, non-offending caregivers, groups with teens and kids, intimate partner sexual violence. Like we currently at WICSAP are working on a lot of different group guides, and we have some posted as well. So I'll, just to let everybody on the call know, I'm going to send those out so that you can have those resources also. One other question that came in that we didn't get a chance to get to was, from Heidi, and it's any pointers for groups that are occurring in shelters where you may only have 4 to 6 weeks and members are living together also?
Ooh, good question.
Yeah.
I'll give a little answer, but I have a feeling there may be much better information from you all as listeners and leaders. So the one thing I would say about that is really, since there's living in the same space and then doing group, if there's any way to create a real sort of separateness for group. So when we come into this room or come into the group, we're leaving behind the living situation and everything else. This is a separate time of interacting. And what's said in there does not go out into the living space. And then I think there are different ways of doing it. Sometimes it could be there might be a physical door that as you walk through this door, you know, taking a deep breath in the group or having the group really switch from living situation to group situation might be one small way of doing it. But I'd love to open it up to others if they've had some real success with that.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. Group is like Vegas. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What happens here stays here.
Yeah, so maybe they could make the Vegas room or something. That'd be kind of fun. Because I think the big challenge with that's going to be confidentiality and making sure that, you know, people aren't sharing what's shared within group, that it's confidentiality within confidentiality, really.
And the question that, you know, with our groups, if we do that question of why I'll be back, obviously they're working towards transitioning out of there. So it might be, it could be what I bring to this group. And so that's a way of creating a connection. And if someone has trouble coming up with something of what they're bringing to the group, invariably other group members can come up and they might say, well, you're here. That's, you know, good for you. You're actually here. So you can really craft a question to be one that supports and honors the space, if it's a temporary time that they're there or, you know, transitioning in and out with the groups as members or as participants are staying in the shelter. So sorry, I don't have a super great answer for that. I think that's probably a kind of a constant challenge.
Yeah, and I'm sure that I'd be interested to hear from some shelter managers as well about the levels of confidentiality, because I think this is definitely a component to what you're discussing. But yeah, sometimes it is just straightforward like that, like setting the simple rule about the importance of the boundary of the group. And so yeah, thank you very much for sharing that, Lori. And Kay, we appreciate that as well. So I think we're running out of time, and I just wanted to move into the wrap-up portion to remind people that when you exit the webinar, you're going to have an evaluation that appears. So please just take a couple seconds and fill that out, and then you're going to receive that follow-up email verifying your attendance and giving you that ongoing training hour credit. Sometimes our emails go to spam and junk folders, so please check those. And if anyone has any questions, send me an email, joshua@wixsap.org. I'm going to be sending out some materials that have been spoken about today, some of the resources that we have about various types of group, and then further answers to additional questions. If you have any for Kay and Lori, I can still facilitate that. And finally, I'd just like to say thank you so much, Kay and Lori, for talking about this important topic. I think it was so great to hear about that recruitment piece and how that's so critical, and we got that great brainstorm going, but also just the little things to think about really making sure that that retention piece, that they are coming back through all the different phases. And I specifically love the letters idea and writing that in the third phase for the next group. I think that's such a cool idea. So it was really, that's one that I'm definitely filing away. So I want to say I appreciate all your work and thank you for presenting today.
Thank you. Yeah, and thank you for those who attended. This is, I really appreciate you you participating in this, too. We will be at WICSAP, so if you find that there are further questions and want the real giveaways that we have, we'll be doing this training there as well. So thank you.
That's right. Yeah, so our annual conference is happening May 7th through 9th in Spokane, Washington, at the Red Lion at the Park Hotel, and Kay and Lori will be presenting further on this topic as well. So if you do have any follow-up questions, please join us at the conference, and you can email me about that as well. All right. Well, thank you all for attending, and thanks again to our presenters, and we hope you all have a great day.
Good night.
All right. Bye, Kay. Bye, Lori.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.